and welcome again to the Ask Beattie Show. And isn't it the truth? Isn't it the truth, my friends, that we all go through so many ups and downs in our lives? And as the Beatles tell us, and as I've been trying to convince you and motivate you now for the last several years, is that when we find ourselves on a roller coaster ride or on a merry-go-round ride, and these are not fun rides, we have some decisions that we really do need to make about our lives and about our relationships. And that question, it ultimately is a question that you have to ask yourself and you have to answer. What am I going to do? My depression is not lifting. And by the way, 16 million adults in the United States, you are not alone, are suffering from clinical depression, and that translates into 1 in 5 Americans across the board. That means whether or not you're rich or poor or black or white or Christian or Jewish or gay or straight or trans, mental health and mental health issues, they know no boundaries. Or what about anxiety, anxiety disorders? We have 40 million adults in the United States that are suffering from a variety of anxiety disorders, which can absolutely, absolutely cripple you. So you've tried to meditate, which of course is a really good thing, a really positive thing. You exercise, you're taking vitamins, you're taking supplements, you're doing all of the natural things that you can possibly think of. And yet that depression and that anxiety continues to linger. And I'm hoping that you can actually just give yourself permission to get a second opinion. I was looking at my phone before the show, and I was looking at all of the different creams, face creams for women and masks and lipsticks, and we're so much more open to trying brand X and brand B, and talking about all of these different things with different people. And yet when it comes to our mental health, when it comes to our relationships, when it comes to our sex lives, I think we are still, for the most part, very, very reluctant, very, very anxious to not only talk about it, but of course, if you're not talking about it, it is highly unlikely that you are then going to take some action. And of course, action is what it is really all about. And for those of you who've been listening to the Ask Beattie Show, today is show 272. It's absolutely amazing where the time has gone. You know, I've been trying to really convince you that your mantra, like my mantra, when it comes to issues in our life, really needs to be to acknowledge and to address and resolve. And I think that we're so much tending to want to deny and avoid, and we're going to work more and we're going to work out more. And of course, all of those things can be really, really positive. And yet if we don't deal with our issues head on, I think there is this magical belief that somehow our problems and our issues are going to just disappear on their own without doing any work at all. So that I'm hoping that whether or not it is depression or anxiety, or what about the substance abuse, you know what you are doing. you are drinking too much, you are popping too many pills, as so many people that I have treated over the years do, as a way of trying to alleviate depression and anxiety. So you're in this sort of circle, and you have to make a decision about what is it that you are going to do. And your relationship, you've been in a relationship, and this is for people who are in relationships, for people who are not in relationships and who are wanting to be in relationships, they also need to do a lot more than just talk about why they have not found anybody to date. So this is all about really being serious, about being willing to do some work, being willing to take some really concerted action, so that you're going to be able to hopefully and finally meet some of the most important goals that you have. You know, when I look at the world of relationships, for first marriages, I don't know whether or not you're aware, the divorce rate now, it's a little bit less than it has been for years. We've been talking about a divorce rate of 50%. Now the statistics are about 45%. For second marriages, that divorce rate number, and a lot of people, I was at an event where I was a speaker last Friday night, and people were really, really surprised to hear that the divorce rate for second marriage is 63%. This happened to be an event for single women. And for third marriages, that number skyrockets to 72%. So there are things, again, that we need to do rather than just complain about the fact, as so many people do, and I hear this all the time, that there are no good men in New York City. Well, there are a lot of good men, and there are a lot of good women in New York City, and of course across the country and across the world. But if you're finding that you are in this never-ending cycle of always ending up with the wrong person, then you have to decide whether or not you are actually going to look inward and look at yourself and see what it is that you are doing or what it is that you are not doing that is contributing to the fact that your relationships have not worked out in the past. And it's not about blaming yourself. It's not about beating yourself up. But it's about being honest, because I think it's very, very easy these days for us to look external to ourselves. And, you know, what I've identified over the past number of years is that there are actually three things. And I go around the country talking about these three things all the time that we need to do if we want to find and maintain a successful relationship. And of course, the first thing is that we need to be in a good place emotionally and psychologically and psychiatrically. And we need to be honest with ourselves about dealing with what I call our skeletons in the closet. It may be abuse of various different kinds, sexual abuse or verbal abuse or physical abuse, because all of these things really impact our today life. And if we don't find a way to emotionally work through, as an example, what did and did not happen in our lives, it's very, very difficult to be able to live in the moment. And in fact, if you don't do this kind of work, you're going to find that you really do have one foot in the past and one foot in the present. And number two, there is a learning curve for all of us, that we do need to learn the ingredients that go into a successful relationship. And even though these days everybody is talking about relationships, that when you have in-depth conversations, you can see, or at least I can see, that we have a lot to learn. And there's a lot to learn by reading. There's a lot to learn by listening to podcasts. There's a lot to learn by listening to me and by reading articles. But we need to be, again, serious and committed to incorporating this kind of, let's call it coursework into our lives if we want to be successful in the world of relationships. And then, of course, you know, I've been talking about this for years, that people need to be willing and serious to use my 10-step formula based on my research and book, For Better, For Worse, Forever, Discover the Path to Lasting Love, which absolutely, absolutely helps you accurately assess who's right for you and who's wrong for you before committing to any serious relationship. And it was interesting. I was on a panel on Friday night at a women's event, and there happened to be a woman on the panel with me who was a matchmaker. I'm not going to mention her name. I don't want to embarrass her. And, you know, she was saying, oh, well, you know, with my matchmaking, you know, you're really able to find out who somebody is and is not within, 3 or 4 months. And that's absolute nonsense. It really takes, and of course, my research found that it takes close to a year. You have to play out all the ups and downs that go through real life relationships and find out about your partner's skeletons in the closet. You want to find out whether or not your partner has the skills, and of course you have to have the skills too, of emotional communication and problem solving. And you want to find out whether or not your partner is really capable of emotional intimacy. And I'm not talking about sex right now. I'm talking about emotional intimacy, the caring and the sharing and the respect and the commitment and the trust. And I wish that there really was a way to be able to fast forward this process. But in my experience, there certainly is not a way to pretend that we don't have to. Of course, my analogy is really play out the points of the match. And that was one of the things when I did the research with 450 people in the Providence and Boston and Connecticut area. And you've probably heard me say that in my personal life, I'm probably one of the most impatient people that you would ever want to meet. Now, professionally, I'm probably really, really super patient. Sometimes I think maybe I'm a little bit too patient. But there was not a way to fast forward the process. And I think that we have to go into the world of dating and we have to go into the world of relationships if we're serious, really, about wanting a healthy relationship, and do the things that are really in our best interest. I mean, I have a situation, right now with a patient. Her boyfriend happens to be pretty sick, and he's been incredibly abusive to her, completely inconsiderate, has a sense of entitlement that she, in fact, we were talking about this yesterday, that she was really going to be a Cinderella. And, you know, she said to me, but he's sick. Is it not okay that he orders me around? Is it not okay that he puts me down? And I was saying to her, no, it doesn't matter that he is sick. He still needs to be able to treat you with a great degree of appreciation and a great degree of respect. So again, we can make excuses. Somebody has got a cold. Somebody is having a health issue. And somehow, I think a lot of people are inclined to let bad behavior off the hook. And I think that, and I don't think, I know that it is always, always a problem. So if somebody is not treating you well, and of course, the show today, we're going to be talking about domestic violence because October happens to be Domestic Violence Awareness Month. So there's a lot that's going to be going on in a couple of minutes when I talk about all of the issues and the dynamics of really what domestic violence is really all about. But if people are not treating us well, and you have to look at your own life, whether or not it's at work or with your friends or with your family, you have a decision that you actually do need to make. Are you going to enable And by enabling, you're really encouraging bad behavior? Or are you going to find the words and are you going to find the way and say to the person who's treating you badly, who's treating you disrespectfully, that it is absolutely not okay? And don't talk to me like that. And if we don't express, these kinds of feelings, I think a lot of people think that the person should know, but people are not, they are not mind readers. So it's really up to us to step up to the plate and let people know what is okay and what is not okay, and not in an aggressive, hostile way, but in a way where hopefully there's going to be some resolution, especially if this is a relationship that you happen to really value. It's not about exiting relationships when things start to get off track, because in the best of relationships, there are going to be plenty of ups and downs. But it is about making sure that we are communicating well, that we are communicating clearly our feelings and what is okay and what is not okay. And hopefully we are with partners who are willing to listen and who are willing, unlike a lot of people, particularly people in the political arena, to say, I'm sorry, I apologize, I overreacted, I spoke in a way that was not loving and that was disrespectful, and I'm going to make sure, I'm going to really work on this, that if I'm in a bad place or if I'm tired, that I'm going to do a better job in being able to deal with conflict and difficulties that happen to arrive in all real life relationships. Well, I read, actually it was on the internet, and it was in The Guardian, which is an English publication, about a piece about Hillary Clinton. And in the piece, Hillary Clinton was interviewed on Good Morning America, and she made the comment that she felt that she was very, very gutsy in staying in her marriage to her husband, Bill Clinton. So here I am, I'm reading this piece, and I'm saying, oh my God, October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month. And I think that the last thing that we want you, the last thing that we want is for women to believe that it is gutsy to stay in abusive relationships. And remember, of course, that abusive relationships are more than just physical and sexual abuse. So I wrote back, and I'm not sure if or where it is going to be published. I certainly put it on my Facebook page. And this is what I said. I said, Hillary, what is gutsy about allowing and enabling your partner to emotionally abuse you and humiliate you over and over again? Because what is really gutsy is when a woman or a man, and remember that there are men, it's a small percentage, but there are men who are also in abusive relationships where they are being abused. So what is really gutsy is when a woman or a man realizes that no one should ever engage in and enable destructive and self-destructive behavior. And what's really gutsy is when they get to a point sooner rather than later to extricate themselves from the abuse. And in my world, and in my opinion, that is really gutsy. So let's hear what Helen Reddy has to say about I Am Woman. Question, of course, and I'm hoping that every year we are going to find ways as women and men as well to become more empowered. But we have to look at the reality here of what is going on. And, you know, I'm so disappointed in a Hillary Clinton and in a Melania Trump. I mean, these women, they are, in quotes, influencers. They have the power. They have the voice to be influencing millions and millions of people, millions of women, you know, around the world. And yet, you know, excuses are made. And I remember I wrote a piece for the Huffington Post, about Melania Trump. And, you know, what she has done as well is that she has encouraged by not standing up and saying anything, to look the other way as she has been emotionally abused again, over and over and over again, you know, by her husband. And the thing that for me is so interesting, she talks about her son Barron and how parenting for her and mothering for her is so important. And yet I feel that her pathological loyalty to her husband, you know, despite his disrespect of her, this is what her son is actually watching. And what lessons is she teaching Barron about how men should treat women? I would love to be a fly on the wall as he has continued to embarrass her and humiliate her over the years with other women and with his really disgusting talk. What she says to her son about what's going on and about how real men should be treating women. You know, and you wonder, was for Hillary Clinton, was the politics worth it? You know, for Melania Trump, is the money worth it? Because in the end, I mean, over the years, over the past 35 years, as you all know now, I've been practicing as a psychotherapist and sex therapist. And the reality is that the women who choose to remain in abusive relationships, even if there is no physical abuse, ultimately self-destruct in some way, emotionally, psychologically, physically. And, you know, what I hope is that if you find yourself in a relationship that is abusive, and even if it's not abusive, but if things are just not working, that you give yourself permission to get some serious help so that you can extricate yourself from your toxic relationship, from your toxic marriage, and finally be able to gain some self-respect. And of course, ultimately, the choice is really yours. And if not now, when? But you know, what I've seen over the years is that people have to continually bottom out over and over and over again. Sometimes, you know, to the absolutely dire bottom of their lives before they are able and willing to do something. But I want to give you some statistics. These are violence against women statistics in the United States. So if we look at murder as an example, every single day, 3 women die in this country as a result of domestic violence. And the euphemism for murders and assaults by husbands and boyfriends. So what does that translate into? It's approximately 1,400 women a year, according to the FBI, and the number of women who've been murdered by their so-called intimate partners is greater than the number of soldiers killed in the Vietnam War. Battering. Now, 572,000 reports Okay, and these are recent statistics of assault by intimates are officially reported to federal officials every single year. The most conservative estimates indicate that 2 to 4 million women of all races and classes are battered every single year, and at least 170,000 of those violent incidents are serious enough to require hospitalization, emergency room care, or a doctor's attention. What about sexual assault? Every year, approximately 132,000 women report that they have been victims of rape or attempted rape, and more than half of them knew their attackers. So it's estimated that 2 to 6 times that many women are raped but do not report it. So who are the targets? Women are 10 times more likely than men to be victimized by an intimate partner. Young women. So listen to this. I mean, these are interesting. They're very sad statistics. They are real statistics, and we need to deal with reality here. Young women, women who are separated, divorced, or single, low-income women, and African-American women are disproportionately victims of assault and rape. Domestic violence rates are 5 times higher among families below poverty levels, and severe spouse abuse is twice as likely to be committed by unemployed men as by those working full-time. We can understand what happens to men's self-esteem. They have ideas about what are real men and how do real men behave. And their depression and their upset and their anger, of course, becomes out of control and over the top, and these men lash out. Impact on children. Violent juvenile offenders are 4 times more likely to have grown up in homes where they saw violence. I mean, that was what was familiar to them. And, you know, when you're assessing partners, it's so important, and that's actually chapter one in my book, For Better, For Worse, Forever, Discover the Path to Lasting Love, is to look at family background. What did you, and of course, what did your partner learn about relationships growing up in their family? Now, that's not to say that because somebody happened to grow up in a violent home where there was physical abuse and emotional abuse and maybe sexual abuse, that you're going to discard the person. But what you do want to know is whether or not that person has found a way, with help or without help, to emotionally abuse what did and did not happen in their lives growing up. And, you know, what I've said to people who I treat who've gone out with people who've grown up in very, very violent, abusive homes, the thing that you really want to hear is not just about the violence and not just about the trauma, but what you want to hear is that I have done all kinds of work on myself because I never, ever wanted to grow up and repeat what happened in my home. I took courses. I had some counseling because I didn't want to become like my father or like my mother. And of course, again, the proof is in the pudding, and you do have to play this all out. But that is the kind of thing that you want to hear, you want to ask, and you want to hear from somebody who is growing up in a violent home, because history tends to repeat itself. Impact on health and social services. So here we have women who are battered have more than twice the health care needs. Of course, it's not just depression. It's not just physical problems and costs than those who were never battered. And approximately, and I thought this was a very disturbing statistic, approximately 17% of pregnant women report having been battered. and the results include miscarriages, stillbirths, and a 2 to 4 times greater likelihood of bearing a low birth weight. So what's happening in the world of legislation? Well, in 1994, that was a few years ago, the National Organization for Women, the NOW Legal Defense and Education Fund, and other organizations finally secured passage of the Violence Against Women Act, which provides a record-breaking $1.8 billion, and I don't know what that amount is today, to address issues of violence against women. So the statistics are very alarming. And I was reading over the weekend in the New York Times that the incidence of murder has gone down somewhat, but that is not so for the incidence of domestic violence. So we certainly have a great deal to do in this particular area in our lives. And I think a lot of people too are maybe unaware and confused about what exactly is domestic violence, because when we use the term violence, I think most people would equate violence to physical violence. However, domestic violence is a lot more. It is a lot more than physical violence. It is abusive behavior, emotional, psychological, physical, or sexual, that one person in an so-called intimate relationship uses in order to control the other. It is about controlling you. It is about control. It takes many, many different forms and includes behaviors such as threats, name calling, preventing contact with family or friends, withholding money, actual or threatened physical harm, and sexual assault. And stalking can also be a form of domestic violence. Now, interestingly, most domestic violence is committed against women by their male partner or ex-partners. And it also occurs in lesbian and gay relationships and is common in teenage dating relationships as well. Every victim of domestic violence, whether male or female or gay or heterosexual, has the right to safety and legal relief. And in fact, I think it was about a year ago, I had the executive director of Day One here in New York. And Day One deals with youth in dating. And I want to just tell you about some of the New York City statistics having to do with youth and dating violence. Very, very concerning. So here we have in New York, 1 in 10 teenagers in New York City schools report experiencing physical or sexual violence in a dating relationship within the past year. 1 in 3 teens report experiencing some kind of abuse in their romantic relationships, including verbal and emotional abuse. A high prevalence of dating relationships of young women between 15 and 24 in New York City are characterized by physical violence. That's 22%. Coercion, 67%. And forced sexual experiences, 37%. And there has been a 68% increase of physical dating violence in New York City since 1997. And I guess you could say the good news is, in terms of people reaching out for help, was that the New York City Domestic Violence Hotline receives an average of 1,400 calls from teenagers every month. And nearly half of all female homicide victims in New York City are killed in intimate partner homicides. So we're looking at all of these statistics. The statistics are not going down. The statistics are either remaining the same or they are going up. And I ask you, What are we going to do about this? And I've been saying this for years and years, that I feel that the schools have an enormous opportunity, an enormous responsibility over and above teaching math and science and history and geography, to really, really teach our kids about what healthy relationships are and aren't. Because if the children are not fortunate enough, and it really has to do with luck, that they have not grown up in families where they have seen healthy, loving dynamics, relationships, communication, and problem solving, where are they going to learn these necessary skills? They're not. I mean, you look at the television shows and look at the relationships that are portrayed on most of the television shows. Where do you see really healthy, loving relationships? I know that that's not sexy, and that's not what advertisers probably want to spend their advertising dollars on. But, you know, the fact is that I feel we have a real crisis in this country and also around the world. And I think that we educationally, with all of the opportunities that we have, I feel that we have really continued to drop the ball. There is so much that we can do. You know, I was saying to somebody before the show started that here we have October. It is Domestic Violence Awareness Month. And I don't know about you, but I haven't heard basically anything at all this month about the fact that we need to really focus on domestic violence. And again, a lot of people are a bit confused about what does it mean to be in an abusive relationship. So I'm going to give you a few examples. And hopefully none of these examples are examples that you have to deal with in your relationship. But if they are, I am encouraging you and giving you permission to sit down with your partner and let your partner know that whatever it is that he or she is doing that is disrespectful and is abusive is not okay, and that you are going to find ways, unlike Hillary Clinton and Melania Trump and millions of other women, to say to yourself and to say to your partner that enough is enough. So here are some examples, okay? Does your partner constantly criticize you in your abilities as a spouse or partner, parent, or employee? You know how somebody is always, always on you, always on you. You don't do this right. You don't do that right. You're not walking the dog right. You're not putting the towels away properly. That is really emotional abuse. It's one thing to say, sweetheart, would you please do this in a different way? It's another thing to be constantly criticizing you. Behave in an overprotective manner or become extremely jealous. You know, the person who doesn't want you to go anywhere, doesn't want you to talk to anybody, who is completely, completely overprotective. And I think initially you may think this is really nice, but it is not. Threatens to hurt you, your children, your pets, your family members, friends, or themselves, where there are threats. Prevents you from seeing family or friends. Gets suddenly angry or loses their temper and you start to feel afraid. Destroys personal property or throws things around. And for those of you who are in these kinds of relationships, I know that this is exactly, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Denies you access to family assets, like bank accounts, credit cards of the car, or controls all finances. Somebody who is really, really, really controlling and over-controlling. Withholds medication or denies you access to health care. Forces you to work in jobs not of your choosing. Uses intimidation or manipulation to control you or your children. Hits, punches, slaps, kicks, shoves, chokes, or bites you. And I've seen this a lot over the years in my practice with people who, if you look at them just, you know, from afar, they're attractive, educated, smart, have great jobs, have great clothes, so that you can never really tell what's going on, and you can never really know what's going on behind closed doors. Prevents you from going where you want to go, what you want to do, and with whom you want to spend time. Makes you have sex, and I have been hearing this more and more, even in my own practice, makes you have sex when you don't want to do things sexually and that you don't have the freedom to be able to say no. Controls your expression of gender identity or sexual orientation. Threatens to out you if you are lesbian, gay, bisexual, or transsexual. There is a meanness. There is a meanness about the person's behavior. And humiliates or embarrasses you in front of other people. And I think that we oftentimes will make excuses for people like this. And I hear, you know, I've heard over the years, well, you know, these men, they really can't stop what they're doing. Let's be very, very clear about something. Domestic violence is not caused by illness. It is not caused by genetics. It is not caused by alcohol or drugs. It is not caused by loss of control of feelings or by anger or by stress or behavior of victim or problems in a relationship. These are things that do not cause domestic violence. Domestic violence is a learned behavior, learned through observation, perhaps what went on, you know, in the person's family growing up, learned through experience and reinforcement, learned in cultures, learned in families, and learned in communities such as schools, peer groups, and workplaces. So we do not want to let these people off the hook. The other thing I think you need to know is that domestic violence does not always end when the victim escapes the abuser. In fact, that can be one of the most dangerous times for the person who has been abused over the years. Because when the person tries to terminate the relationship or seek help, it can be a very, very scary and very dicey time for the person who's finally had the courage to leave. In fact, often it intensifies because the abuser feels a loss of control over the victim. Abusers frequently continue to stalk, harass, threaten, and try to control the victim after the victim escapes. And in fact, the victim is often in the most danger directly following the escape of the relationship or when they seek help. This is a very upsetting statistic that 1/5 of homicide victims with restraining orders are murdered within 2 days of obtaining the order, and 1/3 are murdered within the first month. And you know, unfair blame is frequently put upon the victim of abuse because of assumptions that victims choose to stay in abusive relationships. The truth is that bringing an end to abuse is not a matter of the victim just choosing to leave. It is a matter of the victim being able to safely escape their abuser, the abuser choosing to stop the abuse. You know, I have a program, and I would be so interested in hearing, you know, from you and what your views are about this. I have a program, Stop Domestic Violence Before It Starts, Never Make a Mistake in Love Again, which is based on my research and book, For Better, For Worse, Forever, Discover the Path to Lasting Love. What I have learned over the past 35 years, and again, I would really like to hear what your experiences have been, that if you do a really great in-depth assessment, and I would have to say, using my 10-step formula, I tell people all the time, it's like having me in your purse or in your wallet going through the same kind of diagnostic assessment that I do in my office. It's going to take you about 12 months in order to find out who somebody is and who somebody is not. But that there are always, always, I believe, telltale signs if you play out the relationship sufficiently. And I think that one of the biggest signs for all of us is when there is a problem. So when people say to me, well, we don't fight or we never argue when they are in dating relationships, I get a little concerned, because I know that is not real life. That in real life relationships, there are always going to be a lot of ups and downs. And it's not the ups and downs that are the problem. The real challenge is how are we as a couple going to be able to deal with differences and with conflict, so that when you're dating and when you're getting to know somebody, that happens to be a really, really important thing that you need to find out. So it's not about where are we going to go for dinner and what kind of a trip are we going to have. It's about real life issues that come up when there are differences and when there is conflict, and you really do need to know how your partner is going to react and how your partner is going to behave and how you're going to behave and how you and your partner are going to behave together as a couple when things start to really, really get off track. And that's why for years and years, when my book came out, the book came out originally in 1998. It's been out in three other versions. People will ask me, so Beattie, what do you believe are the two most important or the most important ingredients that happen to make or break relationships? And invariably, as unsexy as this all really sounds, the answers are emotional communication and problem solving. Because if you can't talk, if you're not able to communicate with your partner the full gamut of emotion, the pain, the anguish, the disappointment, the love, the upset, and if you and your partner are not able to acknowledge and address and resolve differences, I'm not suggesting that your relationship is necessarily going to end up in domestic violence. But what I will tell you is that your relationship is going to be, if you continue to stay in a relationship like that, it is going to be a very, very rocky relationship. So if you, like most of us, need to find ways to learn and improve our emotional communication and problem solving skills, There are plenty of books, and there's plenty of courses, and there is counseling that you can take so that you are going to be educated, and you are going to feel empowered, and you are going to be able to walk around, and you are going to feel safe. Something else that I want to just say about the dynamics of abuse, that anyone can be a victim of domestic violence. There is no typical victim. Victims of domestic violence come from all walks of life, varying age groups, all backgrounds, all communities, all education levels, all economic levels, all cultures, all ethnicities, all religions, all abilities, and all lifestyles. And nobody, what I've learned, ever really knows what goes on behind closed doors. And remember, too, that violence in relationships occurs when one person feels entitled to power and control over their partner. And when you see that happening, in the beginning, when you're dating, when you're first falling in love, you need to be aware of this, and you need to be willing, and you need to give yourself permission to tackle this head on before things really get out of control. And, you know, I'm hoping that there are other shows today and other shows this month that are going to be dealing with the whole issue of domestic violence. And if you find that you are in a domestic violent relationship, you do need to reach out. We have the domestic violence hotline in the United States. That number is 1-800-799-7233. So don't hesitate. And when you start to first see the signs that something is really not okay, don't wait too long before he hits you or before she hits him. When you start to see that there are things that are really feeling destructive and self-destructive in your relationship, that is the time, my friends, for you to reach out and ask for help. And of course, in the best case scenario, you are going to be able to stop domestic violence before it starts so that you are never going to make a mistake in love again. So here we have another hour. Oh my God, it is come and gone. I hope that some of the things that I've said have been really helpful. And you know, you can always certainly reach out to me here at the Progressive Radio Network, and you can go to my beautycone.com website. There's all the contact information if you need to talk to me about any of this. And I really, you know, encourage you to do so. So I leave you with my two weekly messages. And of course, the first message, and it's always appropriate, but particularly appropriate today, to find ways to do whatever it is that you need to do to learn to really love yourself and expect the best. And the second message, of course, is that we all need to do a much, much, much better job in this world to begin to love each other. So goodbye, everybody. I'll talk with you next week. Have a good day. Love yourself. Love each other. Be well. And I'll talk with you next week. Bye-bye.